Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. This is Jay West, along with Bobby Simmons and Jerry Oates. And, Jerry, are you there?
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. And you?
I'm doing all right. Give us a little recap on what's going on down there while I see if I can find a couple other phone numbers here to put on.
What's going on down here? Had beautiful weather. We've had some real pretty weather so far. It hasn't gotten real hot, but, you know, it's going to get there, I'm sure. So, but you know, the weather's been real nice, no bad weather. That's a good thing. A lot of people across the country are really catching it, but we've been blessed here so far.
Well, it's starting to rain here tonight, but otherwise we've had a couple of pretty warm days, and hopefully it's going to stay that way. Maybe it'll get rid of a little of the pollen, because I tell you what, that's really been a killer here.
Oh, it's been brutal down here, too. It really has. It's been horrible. Horrible.
All right, let's see if we can get Bobby Simmons on there. Bobby, you there?
I'm here, sir. Good evening.
How are you?
I am doing wonderful, doing wonderful. Got my house in a bit of a turmoil. I'm getting a new floor put in, but other than that, I am doing well.
Was this a planned deal or just?
No, it was planned. I've been in my house 16 years, and it was time to either replace the carpet or do something else. So I'm Randy's putting a wood floor in here for me, and I'm just in the midst of getting that done. So. House sort of looks like Sanford and Son's residence right now. So,
go ahead.
I move furniture out of one room into another room where he can lay that floor, and then I move it back. So, it's just but he's doing a good job. I'm very pleased with how it's going to look. So,
great.
It'll be worth it when we get through.
Is things still on for your adventure, your great adventure?
Yeah, we're leaving first Saturday in June, and we're looking forward to it. Got some wonderful news today. Mr. Smith called me and told me that the VA said his hearing aids were obsolete, and they're going to give him a new set. And I was pleased to tell him that he was obsolete as well.
Oh, my goodness.
But that, you know, I'm thrilled he's getting some new hearing aids. Maybe he can hear again.
Well, I talked to him earlier in the week, and that hadn't happened at that time. But
well, it happened yesterday. So
he called me to wish me a happy birthday. I was Monday was my birthday. I was 69 years old, folks.
There you go. I remember when I used to think that was old.
Oh my God, that was way past old, Bobby.
Jeez, please.
And also talked to Mike Norris yesterday, and he said he thought he was getting out of the hospital today. Do you have an update on that?
No, he took a turn for the worse. We had to shoot him earlier today.
Uh-oh.
No, he's fine. He's probably going to be released tomorrow. He called me earlier today and said that I wanted to know if I would be available to provide taxi service tomorrow if he called, and I told him I'd be happy to, so... hopefully he'll be home sometime tomorrow afternoon.
Well, that's great. He said he was going to try to call in tonight, but he's not on the line yet. Oops, wait a minute. I just lost. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm
everybody
here.
Everybody there? Yeah, I just lost my board there for a second. It just went away on me. So it's you know, I'm a linear type person, and it's very hard for me to run the board and try to run these phone numbers all at the same time. One of the things that I wanted to mention tonight is, speaking of being on the road, it's just going to be a day trip over to South Carolina. But I'm going to be gone next Thursday, and won't be back Thursday night, so I won't be available to run the show. So I will talk to Mike again and see if he wants to try to do it. But probably we will take next week off. Does that sound all right to everybody?
That's fine. It's fine.
Okay, so we'll just plan on it that way. A couple other things from the Wrestling Observer News, and this is something we've been talking about for quite some time now. The latest on the Jimmy Snuka homicide case regarding the 1983 deaths of Nancy Argentino. Just think about how long ago that was. I mean, you know, really and truly, is that Judge Kelly Benach was going to hear today from mental health experts before deciding whether Snuka is competent to stand trial. Of course, a lot of people would have thought many years ago to, you know, make testimony as to whether Snuka was competent, but at any rate, I've been looking at the internet tonight, and I've seen nothing as to whether there was any decision based on that. Some defendants who are declared mentally incompetent are sent to a mental hospital and possibly never tried. But Snuka's attorney, Robert Kirwan, claims Snuka suffers from post-concussion syndrome, and that's something we've talked about before. Doesn't understand what he's being accused of, and that he has trouble remembering the names of family members and doesn't recognize his attorney. And then prosecutor Charles Gallagher has been making the claim from day one that, you know, this is all a work, that when they originally, or several months ago when they, you know, had their time to talk with Snuka, he was, I guess as much as Snuka could, was competent. And so we'll just see how that goes. As Gordon would say, it remains to be seen. But this is something that's unbelievable in the length of time it's gone on. Anybody got any comments on that?
I don't.
You know, God love him. I don't, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Well, it's been, you know, his lawyer is, you know, this is a really hot subject about this syndrome with being taking the hits and all this kind of stuff. It's something that's come out here in the last couple of years, particularly with football players. But it you know, now that might work where it didn't a couple of years ago. But once again, it's they still haven't come to a decision as to whether he's going to be tried or not. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about before we got into the main story tonight, and Mike said if he was on, he would discuss it. But Bobby, I know you you knew Billy Wicks, who passed away this past week, 84, Memphis main eventer. Do you have any comments on him?
I just I met Billy Wicks through the reunion in Mobile. Never had the privilege of being in a ring with him. Billy was Billy back in the late 50s, early 60s, had a run with Sputnik Monroe where they drew the biggest house in the history of Memphis wrestling at an outdoor stadium there somewhere. They had a great program up there with Sputnik. They made a lot of money together. And Billy was he grew up, his best friend was Greg Peterson. They trained together as kids and were very proficient wrestlers. They were pretty good shooters. And Billy, after he was also a very fitness, much like Jerry, who continues to work out. Billy, up as long as he could, was a gym rat. He stayed in the gym, and he just, after he got out of the wrestling business, he went to work for the sheriff's department there in Memphis and was there until he retired. And then moved back to North Carolina, and that's where he passed away the other day, was in North Carolina. But Billy was a fine gentleman. Had a lot of respect for him. One of the funniest lines I ever heard. And it's one of those things where you just had to be there, I guess. But me and Rocket Monroe were sharing a room in Mobile. It's probably 3:30 in the morning, and it was one of those nights where everybody was staying up all night, and Billy and Sputnik and I don't know who else, there was four or five people standing outside our room. We had the door closed. We were laying in the bed, but we were listening. And Sputnik was about three-quarters lit, and he said, you know, some people say I have a big mouth. And Billy Wicks spoke up and said, I can't really believe anybody would say that about you. it was just one of those things. You had to be there, but good guy. Billy was also a pretty good harmonica player. He would play his harmonica there when he was up in Mobile. But yeah, Billy's a good guy, and he's going to be missed. Mike can give you a lot more of the history of that, but good
yeah,
guy. Hated to lose him.
Like I said, I expected him to call in. Did he call in tonight? But I haven't seen him on the line yet. Did Billy Wicks attend any of those Tennessee reunions that you went to there with Charlie?
Never attended any of the Tennessee reunions. When those started, his health had gotten to the point where he was just unable. He didn't travel much at all anymore. He had not been to Mobile in the past, 5-6 years. Lost another guy, and I don't know if you were going to mention this or not, but we lost another guy a couple days ago. And I don't know if Jerry ever ran across him or not. His name was Maxie York. Maxie was the brother of Paul Morton, who was the referee in Memphis. A lot of people know him from that Memphis TV show. Maxie is the uncle of Ricky Morton of the Rock and Roll Express. He passed away day before yesterday at 90 years old. And good guy. Met him again through the Mobile reunion and had a lot of great stories. He was a very funny guy. But, yeah, we lost him 2 days ago as well.
Did he end up working for the police department after he got out of the business?
I do not know.
I think I saw something on that, and that's one of the things that he – and, you know, that wasn't uncommon for a lot of the guys in the business to go into the security business or things like that after they –
Well, him and Paul – I was talking to Bo James earlier today, and he told me that him and Paul, after they got out of the business, repossessed cars. And he said they were like in their 80s. And he said, you know, they'd be like walking down the street, and people would say, oh, look at those two old guys walking together. And he said they would repossess some guy's car. They'd hotwire it and repossess it, you know. So, they, but yeah, they were, not a lot of people knew they were brothers, but they were.
Jerry, did you ever work with Billy Wicks?
No, never met him.
Okay. I had, since you were talking to Bo James, Bobby, has he mentioned anything to you about this reality show that he's they're talking to him about doing?
Well, they approached him and they sent him a bunch of paperwork and I don't know if they've got back with him after all that or not. I mean, it was they approached them and they've been talking to them about it. I don't know if there's any progress been made on it or not.
All right, I was hoping maybe we could have him on one night and discuss not so much the show itself, because a lot of times you can't talk about those things until they either, you know, the contracts are signed or it's determined they're not going to do them, but kind of about the process that's involved in, you know, getting someone interested in you and what you have to do to get them interested in you and things like that. And he could probably give us a few horror stories about that. Of course, I'm sure he could give us some horror stories about some other things, too. But some of those trips in the wintertime through those mountains up there going to work on Saturday nights. Getting down to our subject matter, and I'd asked Jerry last week if he would mind discussing his time as a promoter during the early part through the middle part of the 2000s, 2004 to 2006, and he said he would do that. Jerry, when did you, for the most part, retire as a wrestler from the business?
Well, I never did like some guys have, you know, 14 retirement matches. I only had one. So you asked me, my retirement match was in March of 2012.
March of 2012?
Yes.
During the middle 2000s, I would assume that during that time, you had your...
I'm sorry, I
before
think
you,
it was 2010. I think it was 2010.
Okay, 2010. Let me write that down. Where was that?
It was in a little town outside of Columbus. I don't even remember the name of it. I just wanted to wrestle one time in 2010 to say I wrestled in five decades.
Right.
Was that the tag match when you worked with Ted Allen?
That was my last match. It sure was.
Wasn't that America's? Didn't y'all do that in America's?
It wasn't far from there. It wasn't far from Columbus. The match was myself, Ted, and Bo Oates against Greg Brown, Bordell Walker, and Ted Allen. That was Ted's, I think, 15th retirement match, but that's neither here or there.
Bobby, when did Ted pass away?
Oh, geez. 5 years ago, I think.
So it wasn't long after that you must have been in. Of course, I know Ted worked every chance he could get, but that must have been close to one of his last matches.
Hey, working with three Oates in the same ring could put a lot of stress on you.
It put a lot of stress on me. You'd be a man of the
I can't
remember. Him and Rocket died the same year. And I think it was 5 years ago. Time kind of goes haywire with me.
Sure it does. But when Jerry said that, and I didn't realize he had worked that late, and particularly with Ted working that night, I was thinking that had to have been pretty close to Ted's last match.
It wasn't long after. I don't know exactly, but it wasn't that long after, no.
How long had it been since you had worked before you did that 2010 match?
Oh, gosh. When I was running, I didn't wrestle that much, but it was a while.
So sometime, but some around 2006.
Something like that, yeah.
All right, so in 2000, and, go ahead.
No, it was like 4 years, probably.
Okay, so in 2004, I assume you were going great guns with your gym down there in Columbus, right?
No, I'd already got rid of the gym.
You had? You were still living in Columbus?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Go ahead. I was just wondering what made you decide at that point to try. Promoting?
I didn't have my gym anymore. I had some money. And I was thinking about what to do. And I said, well, you know, everybody in town. Man, I wish, you know, we had wrestling the way it used to be, all that. Yeah, everywhere I went, that's all I heard. So I decided...
Hello.
Sorry, Bobby's on his. Bobby's on his business line there. Hello, just. Go ahead,
hello.
Jerry.
Yeah, it sounded like a fire alarm. I thought it was.
Hello.
But anyhow, I decided. You know, I thought a lot about doing it and not doing it So I decided I was going to give it a try. And I searched and looked and. Looked all over town. I got this guy that was in the real estate to help me find a building. And it took a while. Finally found a building and negotiated with that and him hauled around. And the person that owned the building, that's another story. But anyhow, took a lease out on the building. I had my best friend in Columbus. His name was Toby Fuller. He was
hey, Jerry.
A contractor. Yes.
Jerry, now I don't mean to interrupt you, but Jay, I'm just going to give you a heads up. Michael's calling in now, so you may see his number pop up there. He just wanted to let
okay,
me know.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay, go ahead, Jerry. Toby Fuller.
Toby Fuller. He was my best friend there, and I really didn't know him at the time, and I met him at a paint store, and he and I had another friend. We were friends with this guy and didn't know each other. But to make a long story short, Toby became a very dear friend of mine. And I asked him about, you know, I told him who I was, and he said, I know who you are. And so he met me and we went out to the building. I told him what I wanted to do as far as painting it and this and this, and he said, I'll be glad to help you. And Toby was more than a friend. I mean, he helped me so much. We painted the whole outside of the building. We painted the inside of the building. We put acid on the floor, stained the floors. I mean, we made this place gorgeous. And so, you know, I had to put this building together, and it took a lot of money, a lot of elbow grease, and I had a lot of people helping me. Never really actually hired a contractor. I had to find bleachers that wasn't, you know, you just think you can just find all this stuff off the top of your head.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I got a hold of Ted Allen, asked him if he know where any bleachers were, and I called everybody I knew, you know, and I priced bleachers, and bleachers was going to cost me about $80,000.
Good grief.
I said, my God. You know,
yeah,
so,
people think this stuff grows on trees.
You do, you know, and then I said, my gosh. So I finally called the guy that graduated with my sister. He was an auctioneer. And I told him what I was looking for, and he said,
yeah, Mike.
You know, I run across those every now and then. So this rocked along, and I'm still doing other stuff on the building. We're painting the building. We're cleaning it out. We're redoing lights and putting in. I was blessed. I had another friend of mine. He was an architect, and he come up there and he drew up the plans and had to submit the plans on what I was going to do to this building. I mean, it was no joke. Had to put in all kind of exit doors with panic bars on them. Had to put a new fire alarm system in there. And so we're doing all these things, and I'm still hunting bleachers. So this guy calls me out of the blue. And there was a high school there in my hometown, and they was going to demolish it. And they had 10 sets of bleachers in their gym. So he told me to go out there and look at them. So I went out there and looked at them, and they were perfect, perfect, great condition, perfect. So I went out there and I bought them. I bought them for $5,000.
Good grief!
But the deal was we had to move them. So that wasn't you got to move bleachers that open up, and, you know, expand. Well, in here,
right? So, like high school type inside bleachers.
That's exactly what they were. So I had another buddy of mine that he had a business right down the street from where we was going to put the arena. He had a moving North American van line. So I asked him, I said, how much you charge me to come out there and get those things? We'll load it if you'll just go out there and haul. He said, man, I won't charge you anything. I mean, I was blessed. I had so many people helping me, you know. And so he brought the tractor trailer out there. So we went out there the next day. We was out there like at 8 o'clock that morning, and we left at 5, and we only had 2 sections loaded. I got 8 more to go. I had to finally run a forklift. I mean, it turned into a nightmare. And then we got them out there, and we had to get them off. We had to bolt them down, and I'm thinking, what have I done? What have I gotten myself into? You know, now this thing is just rolling along, rolling along. It's eating money. It's eating money. And I got to put in 30 tons of air conditioning. That was $20,000.
Did you pretty well eat your bankroll by this time?
Yeah, I still got money, but it's you know, then I rocked along, and then I had to put in, I mean, this place, I don't think I really got a lot of pictures of that place. It was unbelievable. I put in ring light. Ring lights cost me $6,000. The wiring for them cost me $4,000. It was unbelievable. It was gorgeous. Toby helped me paint. We painted the whole inside flat black. The ceiling, everything. Then we hung black drapes all the way around the wall. I mean, this place was gorgeous. And I already had a ring that come out of Savannah my father-in-law had given me. You know, Toby and I reworked the ring. We repainted it and put new boards on it and painted the post and put new cables on it. I mean, it was, everything was unbelievable. It was just beautiful. Ordered new chairs, you know. Everything was just unbelievable. So getting ready to open up to get the final inspection on this building. Fire marshal comes out there. He said, well, he said, looks like you're about ready. I said, yeah. He said, well, I got to tell you something. He said, you have to put in a sprinkler system in here. I said, what? A sprinkler system? He said, yeah. I said, just in an arena part? He said, no, you got to put it in the whole building. And they had some upstairs in it, too. My God. So I checked on that. Call the fire, I mean, fire extinguishers. I mean, the guys that put in that kind of system, sprinkler system, I called him out there. He said, well, let me figure it all up, and I'll call you. He called me the next day. He said, it will be $106,000.
Whoa.
I said, really? So I said, there's got to be another way. So I call the fire marshal, and he come back out there. And then he looked up. There's some codes, international codes, and this and this and this and this and this. So he let me slide on the sprinkler system. So it was a lot. But then I had to put bathrooms in. For every, how does this work? For every 30 women, or every 35 women, you have to have a toilet. I had to put in 11 toilets for women. 11. And then I had to put toilets and urinals in for the men. I had to have handicap stuff. I had to put sinks in, you know, in the bathrooms. I had to put, it was an absolute nightmare. And I'm wanting to go jump off a bridge somewhere.
Not like the old days.
It took almost 2 years to do this. But I'm
2 years?
And Toby, yes, almost 2 years. Toby painted the whole outside for me. We trimmed it. We did. I mean, it was gorgeous. And I know when guys finally come here, Bob Armstrong said he'd give anything in the world to have that building. I mean, it was gorgeous. I mean, it was absolutely gorgeous in there. From the outside, you wouldn't think it looked like that on the inside. And we built a ramp on one of the walls, and you would come to the ring out of the ceiling, but you'd walk down this ramp to the ring. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was gorgeous. And then we started running, you know.
Let me ask you this. Did you have to do anything to the parking lot on the outside?
No, that parking lot was you could have parked 1,000 cars out there. This place was perfect. A perfect location. It was absolutely perfect.
Did you have any thoughts based on the amount of money it took you to put that thing together of utilizing it for other functions besides the wrestling that you were going to promote on Saturday night?
I had Hogan's daughter come to town one time, and when radio station wanted to have something, wanted her to be out, but they did, and it flopped, and she didn't draw nothing.
Okay.
He was there, and, you know, but it, yeah, but. What did I don't know if I had anything else in that building or not. I don't think so. It was a trauma to do that because you have to take that ring down and, you know, it would just been. But anyhow, I started running and, you know, started doing the matches. I was running like every 2 weeks. And then, you know, getting talent, it was pretty good getting talent. Of course, you know, all these guys wanted a fortune. You know, like they were some big name. You know, Eric Watt, he worked for us a lot. Sonny Fiaki, Ted Allen, Greg Brown was there. We had Chris Stevens. We had David Young. We had a lot of good talent. We got a lot of talent from Jody when he was connected with New York. We'd get talent from him. So we had a good crew, you know, and then things. Then we started. Then you know, it was that rent on that building was brutal. So my accountant tells me, he said, you need to get an investor. So he hemmed around. He said, I'll find you an investor. And he finally did. He found two thieves. I'm telling you. I mean, you got no idea. So anyhow, but I'd been open a while.
Right.
And I was running. And so we have a big match out there. We're gonna have. We had Dusty there. We had Tully Blanchard there. We had Ronnie Garvin there. And we had our crew there. And then brought in some girls and this. And my son helped with all that booking of that. And it was overbooked. I mean, by thousands of dollars too much. But he got in with the people that. With the new investors, he got in with them, and they were like pushing me out the door all along. You know, they knew more than I did. But so this thing rocked, and that night was unbelievable. I mean, it was. It's the one if the fire marshal hadn't put me under the jail. I mean, you could not have got a 2-year-old child in that building after it started. Dusty worked with Tully, and. It was, I mean, it was just absolutely unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Great house. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
How far into the run was that?
Pretty good way. And then the next week, we brought Abdullah in. And he and I were going to be partners. But I had 35 stitches in my face from a week before, and Dusty was there, and I couldn't run. So Butcher come in, and I called Butcher, yeah, I'll come, you know, and he gave me a price. I said, that's great, you know. So it's almost, I mean, it was, so Eric Watts and him worked with David Young and Chris Stevens. And we put Greg Brown with them, and it was Greg Brown, Ted Allen, Chris Stevens, and David Young, and we called them Bad Company. And I'm telling you, they were over like fat rats. I mean, they were over. I'm telling you, it was Greg was great on the horn, and Chris was a good talker. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. So that, we come back after Dusty, we put Eric Watts and Butcher again. Bad Company, and the place was packed again. And so down the I don't know if it was it was the following week to bring the Butcher back. And so I called him. I said, you know, you come back on that day. He wanted double the money. I said,
who is this?
Butcher.
Oh, okay, I got you.
He said, well, I drew the house. I said, no. We worked on drawing that house. You just by yourself didn't draw that house. He wanted double the money, and I said, no, I'm not doing that. So anyhow, just rocked along, and we finally got a little TV show, and I'm thinking, what have I done? You know, now talent is getting stale, and I'd ask poor Ted Allen. Ted, you seen any talent out there? I know a guy. This will happen every other week. I've seen a guy. He said, I said, bring him in. I asked the guy, I said, buddy, how long you been working? I've been working 4 years. 4 years, huh? I said, how many matches do you have? I've had 13 matches in 4 years. Really? Nobody knew nothing. I mean, even guys, I was like watching them, some of them guys, you talk Carney, they don't know what you're talking about. You talk about Broadway, they don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, oh my, this was a culture shock to me. But then some of them would try to tell me what they was going to do. And then, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, I've been on this stuff too long. So anyhow, the people that come in, a man and his wife, they finally stole everything I had, and I was done.
When you started promoting...
That's a quarter of $1 million.
Oh, my goodness.
They stole everything I had. I was done.
Wow. Unbelievable.
It was the worst experience of my life. It was the most horrible thing, something that I love to do. You got two thieves that come in, know nothing about the wrestling business. All they did was steal other people's businesses, so I found out later. But, you know, karma is a funny thing.
Yes, it is.
Shortly thereafter that, they had a plane, and it went down, but they had just gotten off of it. And then about a year later than that, they had all kind of property in the Carolinas. They had a plane. They had this. They had this. They went bankrupt. So
that's the way things go.
And you know, it took me a long time to get over that.
Oh, I'm sure.
It took me a long time. I mean, mentally.
Sure.
Because my earning days of money were over. You know, I couldn't. So as far as the wrestling business, when I actually got out of it, I should have got it out of my system. There was something that I did. There's something that what I knew doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
I should have left it alone. That's why I don't go to. I've been to one reunion, never go to another one. I'm not going to sit around if some guy wants me to come to Villa Rica or somewhere. And he said, yeah, I'd like to invite you up here. You can sit up here and sell pictures. I'm going, yeah, I'm going to drive like 600-mile round trip to sell some pictures. Now, you give me $1,200, I'll come up there. I'm not going up there like I've seen these broke-down guys that can't even probably ride the Greyhound bus to get there, don't even have a car, sitting there
right.
Selling pictures. I ain't doing it. I don't have to do it. Thank God in heaven. Thank Jesus. I don't have to do that. I'm not going to do it. So I had a lesson that cost me thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars for nothing. And it wasn't an ego trip. It was something,
sure,
I wanted to do and promote, and I thought it could be. It can't be. It'll never be. It'll never, ever be what we knew it. And anybody thinks it is an idiot. I see some stuff on Facebook. These guys put these matches on.
Yeah.
I honest to God, God, I didn't have nothing like that. I wouldn't associate my name with anything like that.
You ought to go back into business, because I know where you can get a whole bunch of seats for free, probably. You can probably go down there to Turner Field and get every seat they have in the outfield, because they're not being used.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm watching right now. They're pretty well empty.
I am too.
But I learned a lesson that, you know, when something's over, it's over. You know.
Well,
you can't.
You know, a lot of people learn
even,
that.
Even in your heart, you know, I actually thought that I could really make a heck of a little living out there, and I wanted to run
right.
some other towns.
Yes.
The things it was too expensive. Too expensive.
Well, you spent a lot of your nest egg just putting that building together, you know. And, but you
absolutely.
Did,
I was done.
You did give a lot of people the opportunity to see probably what was as close as possible to the glory days one more time with what you were doing there for the length of time that it lasted. Did you intend, when you decided to promote, that you were actually going to work, or were you just going to initially just plan to be the promoter?
I just wanted to be the promoter, but the only thing about it, I mean, people still knew who I was in that town. I worked the first couple of matches we had, then I didn't, and then we would do something, and I bet the whole time we ran, I bet I didn't wrestle 10 times. You know, you can't promote and be your star, you know. You
right.
can't do it.
Did you just think about
people
the,
do now.
You're right. Did you think about the next day after you worked that that was going to be the last time you were going to do that?
To work? No. But I was getting to the point where I was still working out, still in good shape, but my knees were really getting bad then. I mean, really. I mean, just, you know, I could take enough pills and work.
Right.
But,
yes,
you know, but. And then I, the next day I would just be in just torment. And, but as far as the way I look, I wasn't embarrassed. I mean, like I told you, right now, I put on a pair of trunks and boots and wouldn't be embarrassed. I mean, I couldn't do anything once the bell rang, but, you know.
You may have a career ahead of you still in New York, because they got some guys that better do the same thing.
That's right. They look good, but they can't run.
They look good, but when the bell rings, it's over.
And I was talking to Greg Brown today. How on earth they grow a dime is beyond me.
Oh.
You know what it is? You know what it looks like? What it looks like? It's like these matches I see on these people put on YouTube. You have to see these guys, I'm telling you. They weigh $135. They weigh $135, I'm telling you.
And that's the heavyweight champion.
Only difference of what I see on you, what these guys put these matches on. I put on that one guy, he was covering tattoos. I think I told y'all this. I said, if you'd have spent your money on a gym membership instead of tattoos, you might have something going for yourself. Well, he blocked
me.
That's
probably half of his weight.
And then it's just, God. But New York, is all it is, it's a bigger scale than that. Those guys, it's really embarrassing, and I hate to see people beat that big of marks or waste money on that trash. I really do.
You're probably not the only. Was there a lawsuit or a potential lawsuit over the Georgia Championship Wrestling name during that time?
No, I had the name. I got it.
Okay.
And then went through the state, and you got to renew it every year, and I didn't. And I think Grady Odom went and got it back, which I didn't care. I was so disgusted then. You could have called it Mattress from Mars by then, and I wouldn't have cared. I was so disgusted with it, you know. And
Jerry said something there that I want to emphasize, and this probably make a lot of people mad, but he mentioned the talent and the guys wanted a bunch of money thinking they were something. You know, there is a few guys out there on the independent circuit that are decent. They look good. They can work. As far as what's going on today, but you got so many out there that because they've main evented at Grandpa's promotion or something, they think they're worth hundreds of dollars. And they're not going to draw you flies. I'm telling you, you put their name on a poster, and their girlfriend and their grandparents may come, but they're going to want to get in free.
What I should have done after some of the ones Ted Adams sent should have made them pay me.
Oh, jeez.
Now I'll tell you who I brought in. And he wanted $500, and I said that's fine. And we booked him with a kid. This kid was from over around Macon. He wrestled for us by the name of, I can't remember now. I tried to block all that stuff out of my mind. I brought AJ Styles in.
Okay.
And that's when he was working for TNA.
Uh-huh.
Well, he worked with this kid who went 30-minute Broadway. I've been in the business then, been around it since 1970, this is whatever. Did you know they got a standing ovation? I've never seen a match where anybody got a standing ovation ever in my life. I never saw the Funk and Briscoe get one, nobody. They got a standing ovation. I couldn't watch. It was a wrestling match. Unbelievable.
Hey, Jerry, you're not thinking of John Bogey, are you?
Who's that talking?
That's Michael.
Was that Mike?
Yeah.
He's on.
They said that I'll never talk to you again. Now, there was another one. And you know, I would call these guys. I'd get names and call them. You know, somebody could call this guy. And I said, yeah. I said, and then before I get halfway through talking to them, they'd tell me what they wanted to come there. I'm thinking, you've never even been in a building like I got here, and you telling me what you gonna charge me? Even Dusty said, he told me, he said, man, he said, I don't believe this building. He said, I don't believe it. He said, I don't believe it. I said, man, it took me 2 years to do this building, man. So I had a lot of help. Toby Fuller helped me. John Bogey did a lot of electrical stuff for me. I had a lot of guys helping me. I mean, I did. I didn't do it all myself. But, but when it was time to take the beating, I took the beating. But I'll never take a beating again like that.
I saw you had the Mass Superstar. Was that Bill Eady that worked for you one night?
Yeah, I had Bill Eady there. Who else? We brought two there a couple of times. He didn't work. We had Ole down. Of course, Ole didn't work either. Had him down a couple of times. That day we brought had Ole and Tully there. We had a meet and greet thing that afternoon. It was absolutely jam packed. I mean it was like the old days, man. It was so unbelievable. You know, I'm thinking, God, we keep us going like this, man. My dream will come true, but it didn't. What a hard lesson. I mean, just you deal with thieves and nobody knows what you put everything you got into something and people steal it from you. It's kind of tough. But it made me a different kind of person, I promise you that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's hard. You learn from things like that. People that you think are your friends and your good buddies, it doesn't take but too long when money's involved and things like that to find out who your friends are, and it's not tied to money. Bobby, did you ever see? Did you ever go down when Jerry was promoting and see one of his matches?
No, I never did. I never made it down. I hate I didn't, but
Charlie was down there.
Charlie, I was going to say, you mentioned Bill Eady. Charlie Smith tells a story about they booked Charlie as a special referee one night, and it was in a tag match, and I don't remember if it was Ted and Jerry against Bill Eady and Ted Allen, and said they got in the little meeting room there before things, and Jerry told Smith, he said, we're going to go an hour Broadway, and said nobody said nothing. They just looked at each other and said, Charlie said, Jerry asked a question, said, can y'all handle it? And Charlie said, yeah, I can handle it. And Ted said, yeah, I can handle it. And then the winner of the Bill Eady says, I can't.
I'm trying to think who else came down. Bill came down several times.
The wrestler, I guess that was Ted Allen, huh? Because I saw the Mass Superstar and the wrestler defeated Jerry and Ted Oates. This was on August the 6th, 2005. You had David Young and Chris Stevens with Eric Watts as referee. A guy named Scott Fantastic worked one night, Chris Stevens and David Young. A guy named Harley Wood, Death Row, and Scott Fantastic. That's what a ring name there. But I've just got a listing here of a couple of the matches that you had on different weeks, and those were some of the names listed. Some of them I'd seen before, and some of them I hadn't.
But we tried to mix it up and tried to get guys, established, and we did. I mean, it was a great thing. Then we started running on Saturday night, which was okay, I think we first started running maybe on a Tuesday night or something. It's kind of just, we'd hit and miss, and it was just, it was brutal. I mean, I thought for a while it would really do, but.
Sure.
We had a first class place. I mean, it was absolutely first class from the word go. I mean, just first class.
I'm sorry,
one of the things he did there too, I remember hearing him talk about is they did a Fred Ward appreciation night during your run there, didn't you, Jerry?
Sure did. And you know, I did that. The only way I would do that, I'd like to say this. You remember Ted's wife, Missy Bobby?
Yes,
Ralph's daughter?
Yeah, I heard about
she
that.
Passed away.
What a gorgeous young woman she was. I remember
her
sitting on the front row at the matches in Columbus.
Yeah, she passed away. She had battled cancer for quite a while, and I really hate that. I mean, she suffered for a long time. But I didn't
she was not
that.
Very old, was she, Jerry?
She was 58, Bobby.
58, okay.
Yep. And her and Ted had a daughter, Melissa.
God love them.
So that's really sad.
Well, I'm sorry I never got to see your promotion down there, Jerry. It sounds like
I mean, not because I did it, but, I mean, I knew what I wanted. And I remember a guy coming out there when I was doing it. And when I got through with it, he said, "How did you know what it was going to look like when you got through?" I said, "I knew what it looked like. It was going to look like before I started it."
Mm-hmm.
And it did. It turned out. It really did. It turned out the way I wanted. But all I can tell you is it's a good thing that I wasn't from a mafia family when that went down. I even had people close to me that was backstabbing me, but
well,
me there.
You know, family.
Yeah.
Family can really surprise you sometimes. You know, and close friends and things like that. That's part of life, though. And sometimes you can forgive them, and sometimes it's easy, and sometimes it's really hard. You know, but I know we have touched on this a couple of nights when I was here, but I really wanted to hear the story, and I appreciate you giving it to us tonight.
I don't mind talking about it. I mean, I'm over all that, and I mean, probably a few years ago, I wouldn't even talk about it. But
right,
it's something that happened, and I'll never forget it, and never forget the people involved, and especially the people that, I mean. Like I told you, my dear friend Toby Fuller, I mean, he'd work out there sometimes 10 o'clock at night helping me, and he was a blessing to me, and in fact, we still talk, and I talked to him not too long before we went on the air, and we just remained buddies, and I'm just glad he was a part of that, but it was a hard lesson, like I told you, if I wound up with $100 million, I wouldn't invest 75 cents in any wrestling match. Nothing.
We kid about that sometimes when we're talking up here, me and Charlie Smith or whatever, about if we were to hit the lottery for $400 million, you know, would we start a wrestling promotion? I'm like you, Jerry. I wouldn't spend 15 cents.
Bobby, I wouldn't, if somebody come to me with that, I might pull a gun on them.
Well, it's like you say, and it's very hard for us to, when it's in your blood, you know, it's there, and you can't help yourself. You'll see these guys from the McMahon promotion to the guy wrestling on the street corner, you see it, and your mind says, I can do that, and I can do it better than they do. And you want to do it, but, you know, you're right. There comes a time when you just have to say, the thing we knew is gone. It's dead. It's never going to be resurrected. Time to move on.
And you have to be smart enough. I mean, the only thing you're doing, if you do fool with it, you're kidding yourself.
Yes, sir. You certainly are.
Like I said about a couple of weeks ago, if you depend on that to try to make a living, and when you get my age and you haven't paid any money in Social Security and all these things that you're supposed to, you're going to be hurting, buddy.
Yeah.
That's when you go around at 75 years old catching a Greyhound bus going to a town trying to sell you pictures.
Yeah.
That's what that amounts to. When you see those guys doing that, they're they're the losers. They're the losers.
Well, you find that in a lot of businesses and folks that had some level of notoriety and fans, and they didn't save their money, and they thought that the IRS would never catch up with them, and their ex-wives would never catch up with them, and it's a very rude awakening. You think you're going to be 30 years old your whole life, and if you're fortunate enough to live to 65, you realize that those waning years are not going to be as good as you'd hope they were going to be. And I hate to see people end up like that.
And you have nothing, and there is nothing to look forward to. I'm talking about especially now. I mean, I made money, not like they make today. The guys that are wrestling for McMahon, I mean, nobody made that kind of money. I don't care who they are. It just wasn't that. But we made a good living, and I was fortunate enough to make enough money wrestling where I got my gym and I got that going. I got my building paid for. I made money. I was making plenty of money. But I'll never forget what my daddy told me one time. He said, nothing stays the same. He said, it'll change. It'll change itself. And that's a fact. The wrestling business changed. What I was doing changed. Nothing stays the same. It'll change. You don't have to change it. It'll change itself. And it did, you know. So, it's a funny thing about what we did, but my love for it, my only love for it is now that I love what I did today. That's over. I don't watch it. I won't turn it on. I don't. What I want to watch that for? It's so cheesy and so trashy and. Everybody's got T-shirts on and all that. I mean, it's just, I can't watch it. I can't.
What gets me is nobody can step a foot out towards the ring unless they've got music playing. You know, it's...
I know. And then when the music stops, then what?
That's right. Very good point. When the music stops and they take their robe off or whatever they got on, then, you know, it's anticlimactic. Then what happens? And like Bobby said, there are a few that are capable. It's just unfortunate there's no venues for them, and really, to a great extent, no opponents for them.
And the thing is, Jay, let's just say you and I wanted to do something. First of all, it's going to cost us a fortune. You got to give us a ring, got to get a hall there, you got to live, you got to get a building, and then you go to the wrong building, you got to have insurance and this. You're in the hole so far before you the first bell rings, and then you ain't got no talent. So what are you,
right.
Who are you kidding? And anybody can call in the show and say they do this and they do that. They're kidding themselves because you're not paying into anything. You're not helping yourself. You're not just to say you're a wrestler now. Who cares? You know. I mean, here's the thing. Look at all the money Flair made.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all the money that Harley made. Have you seen Harley lately?
Yes.
He's paralyzed. He's in a wheelchair. He
right.
Has no feelings in his leg.
And Flair lived the life, you know, that the fans expected him to live, and he felt he had to live. And he spent all his money on the ex-wives and the divorces and the other things that he's, got himself involved in, and he's prostituting himself now just to make a living, as far as I'm concerned. And it's unfortunate because he was one of the top stars, absolutely.
Exactly. And I don't, Greg was telling me today, Greg Brown was telling me, he saw him the other night, he's out there hobbling, he can't hardly walk, like you say, he's whoring himself out for, a few bucks? I don't know. I mean, my God, there comes a time in any man's life, I don't care what he did, even if you took a 4-star general in the Army, sooner or later, he got to retire.
That's right.
You know?
And I'm
surprised they even keep him on up there. I don't understand it. And that's what I'm getting at. I mean, it was, especially when we were doing it, I mean, it was hard enough then, but it's the physical abuse that you do. Like, I went yesterday on my shoulder. One of the nurses told me, she said, "Like, you're still in good shape." I said, "Yeah." I said, I said, "You know, ma'am," I said, "I always took care of myself, and I still take care of myself. But along the way, I beat myself up, and that's why I'm here today. You know, I beat myself up, and it's just a sad thing. And I feel so sorry for Harley. I can't. As hard as he worked, and as much as he loved the business, but look what it did to him. Look what it did to him." And who cares?
Well, they were the heroes, you know. There were people that made you want to be in the business. And, you know, I can see musicians and country stars and rock and roller stars from the 50s and 60s, people that I idolized, and even some people in the broadcasting business. And you know, it's you hate to even, you know, you want them to be like they were, and if they're alive, they're not. And it's they had to live the, you know, as Dusty would say, live the dream, but they had to live their persona in many cases. And in some cases, they just didn't know how to handle money. But that's showbiz, folks. Jerry, I do appreciate you discussing all this tonight. And your comments are extremely valuable to this show.
Well, I mean, there was so much more I could go into, and it's just too much to go into, but I mean that was the gist of the thing, and I do appreciate everybody that helped us and worked hard out there, and I mean everybody did that helped us. They really did, and you know, I couldn't thank them enough. But for it to wind up the way it did is really sad. And, you know.
Yes, sir. We thank you, Michael Norris. Are you there?
I'm here.
I thought maybe they were giving you
a couple of Jerry shows down there, and he had that building was beautiful. And you could see all the effort that was put into it. It wasn't like, you know, somebody just went out and got a flea market booth and, you know, put a ring in there like a lot of places that I'd seen running around that same time. And he had a good crew. And the thing that impressed me the most was the fans that he was drawing, because, you know, number one, he was drawing fans. I mean, you know, there weren't people coming in with the guys or hanging around in the dressing rooms, but just to sit there and listen to them talk, and listen to the excitement build up as it got closer to the matches starting. You know, Jerry, you can consider yourself a failure now, but whatever the length of time that ran, for those fans that showed up for you week after week after week, you were very successful, my friend.
Absolutely.
You were very successful.
I appreciate that. I mean, we did. We had some loyal fans, man. They was just, you know, every week they were there. One of the same ringside seats. And it was, you know, you just kept your fingers crossed that it would be something that we could still be doing today, but it wasn't to be, so. And that's okay. That's all right. But I did try. You know, I did try, and it cost me a ton of money to try. But that's all right. You know, they
how much were you? How much were you charging for ringside seats at that time?
$10, I think.
And how many people could you put in the building?
I could put like 800 in there.
I was going to say, how many would the fire marshal let you put in there? But
I was supposed to put the 650.
Okay. Well, yeah, that was one last chance. And, you know, Columbus was a big area for wrestling. I mean, the people remembered Fred Ward
please.
And what?
It was an unbelievable town. That town, my God. It was unbelievable. I remember early on when I first started here in Georgia, I would be booked. If I wasn't in Columbus, I would be booked in Cartersville. And I'd drive to Cartersville. And I, on the way back home, I'd see that traffic. I would come down through LaGrange for some reason. And I'd see those cars, I mean, bumper to bumper going back to LaGrange. They'd have been to the matches in Columbus.
So
they grew all over, man. I'm telling you, man. They come from Una Vista, LaGrange, Cedar, Georgia, Richland, Georgia.
They would come from Dothan, Alabama.
They come from everywhere. Man, it grew. I tell you, one of the hardest towns here in Georgia that I ever worked in was Macon, Georgia, that Coliseum. It just didn't have the, I don't know. I didn't like that building.
It's like wrestling in a tomb.
It's like wrestling in that building here in Savannah. Same thing.
Yeah, same thing, yep.
No atmosphere on the. Did you ever work in that building downtown, Bobby?
No, never did. Never did.
Wow, what a nice building. That was a better wrestling building, that Coliseum. But, you know, you just. Buildings. That arena I had, it had atmosphere. It was geared for it, you know. It wasn't a bad seat in the house. I mean, it was just geared for it. But there were so many buildings that weren't, but.
Well, it's unfortunate some others that didn't get a chance to see what you did there, because it sounds like it was the last of the really opportunities to see wrestling of our era. Michael Norris, how you doing? Go ahead, Jerry.
No, and just to say this, and I won't say anything else about it. And when guys come there, and the green guy, and we really tried to help them, you know.
Uh-huh.
We tried to help them, you know. And look, man, this is the way it's done. And I always try to put guys that could help them and lead them and show them and get
sure.
them through, you know. And that's the way the business was done when I started. And even before I started, that's the way it was done. And that's what I tried to pass on to, you know, and watch these guys that can work, you know, and see what they. You know, you can't watch somebody know how to work and learn something. You got to watch somebody that knows how.
Right.
Like you said, the best news tonight is that Mike's on
here
with us, and he told me today he's going home tomorrow. That's the greatest news I've heard all week.
Yeah, I am.
How you feeling, Mike?
I'm feeling great. I am feeling great.
Tell the folks that are listening in.
I haven't had anything for pain in 4 days, so we can't attribute it to that. So, but there's still some side effects I'm dealing with that I'm probably going to be dealing with for, you know, a couple months or if not a little longer. But they're going to try and medicate that and get that under control. And the main thing is I no longer have a sidecar, so I can tuck my shirt in now when. when I dress up, but I'm going home with, and Bobby will know what I'm talking about, or if anybody else that's ever had this, what's called TPN. It's intravenous fluids that they're trying to get me my weight back up and get my nutrition levels back up and get me stronger and everything. And but when I was doing it. In December of 2014, where I was doing it strictly that 24 hours a day, nothing else. This I'm only going to do at night, and I'm going to eat regular meals, you know, during the day. I'll have a bit of a restricted diet. There's some things that until everything is healed up and the side effects kind of taper off that I need to avoid. But other than that, you know, I'm feeling good.
Great.
And I was talking to one of the physician's assistants today and just trying to think ahead. And she said that because of this major surgery that I've gotten over and everything, that if it were her, she wouldn't even consider the hip for another 6 months. She said because of the until my nutritional levels and my bone strength and all that is back to, you know, full strength that the hip surgery I may have complications with. So that's probably what I'm going to do. You know, I didn't want it to go that long, but who knows, you know.
Well, part of that will be based on how how you feel based on your, you know, healing from what's going on now. But you've been through, you know, as Bobby can attest to, you've been through a long road here for the last couple of years, my friend, and we certainly are glad that you are where you are on that road now.
I am too, because this was the big hurdle, and if anybody that's ever talked to me, you know, knows that thing that was on me was the bane of my existence, and it nearly drove me crazy. And you know what the symptoms I'm having, the side effects I'm having now, aren't exactly a walk in the park, but they're much more desirable than having that bag on me all the time. So, and he made the neatest little scar. Because what he did is he took some loose skin from the left side of my stomach, stretched it all the way across to cover up where the incision was for the ostomy to close that up, and so I don't have that anymore. And I've got a zigzag scar on my lower chest and stomach. So once I'm totally healed, I said I was going to get a yellow lightning bolt tattoo on there like the Flash. But Bobby said to put TCB on there for taking care of business. So. I might do that too, so we'll see. But back to what you got, one of the questions that came up, Rocket died, Bobby, in June of 2010, and Teddy died in August of 2010.
Yeah, I knew they were right there. So it was just been 5 or 6 years almost. So.
6 years, yeah, almost 6 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as we talked, Bobby gave us a little capsule on Billy Wicks since you weren't on the air with us when we started, but can you give us more of a historical background on Billy Wicks?
Yeah, what Bobby touched on as far as Billy, as he mentioned, and was from Minneapolis, Minnesota, a very, very close friend of his that they started out as not necessarily kids, but at least teenagers in the YMCA wrestling programs, a guy from St. Paul, Minnesota, who we all are familiar with by the name of Greg Peterson. From there, Billy went into, hooked up with a, carnival and actually did, at show, wrestling, you know, taking on all challengers, for at least one summer, if not two. And, I've never have been able to find out, who the lady wrestler was, but he met a lady wrestler somewhere on along the way, and she recommended that he, you know, get trained. So he trained with an old shooter who had a direct link back to Farmer Burns. I don't have that information. The guy's name in front of me, but it's a fairly well known name from that era in the early 19th century, or early 20th century, I should say, wrestling. But from there, and Billy didn't have that long a career. He started in 1957 in Minneapolis, and from there he went to Oklahoma, worked out there for, you know, briefly, then went He went from Minnesota to Portland, worked out in Portland for a month or so, then went to Oklahoma. And was booked in, I want to say it was Wichita Falls, and the promoter there kind of robbed him a little bit. And so Billy, not one to, take things lightly, basically choked the guy out. So McGirt fired him. And from there, he wound up in Mobile. And that's where his... outside of Tennessee, that's where his biggest push was. Buddy Fuller was running Mobile, so before Lee bought it. And Billy wound up there the first time in 58, I think, late 57, early 58. Between there, 58 and 60, he was 4 times Gulf Coast heavyweight champion. And over big time. I mean, Billy was just, he was tremendously over. And then when Buddy sold out to Lee and went to Memphis and started running in Memphis, along with, you know, I guess he bought into with his dad, Roy Welch, and then of course Roy had owned a part of Mobile too at one point. But he opened up or not opened up Memphis, but started promoting Memphis for them. He brought Wicks and Sputnik up to Memphis because that feud had actually started in Mobile. And they had some tremendous matches in Mobile. And so they took that to Tennessee. And then by 61, Billy was pretty much out of the business. He decided that he wanted to do something besides wrestling because Billy was, and I guess a lot of guys that are, you know, come from a legitimate background, he was disappointed a little bit in that it wasn't an actual competition. So he kind of got out of it. He became a police officer there in Memphis and stayed with them, you know, until he retired from the Memphis Police Department. But he would wrestle periodically, like he came back to Mobile in 72, and he would wrestle basically part-time. But mainly in Tennessee, but if he went on vacation, he'd come down to Mobile and do some spots there. But he stayed with the police department there in Memphis and became taught hand-to-hand combat there. And then once he retired from the police department, he moved to North Carolina. And like Bobby said, mentioned, he was a gym rat. So he met a bunch of guys who, this was at the beginning of stages of MMA, and he started teaching, you know, grappling and catch-as-catch-can to a lot of guys, you know, and shooting and stuff to guys that were into MMA, and that became a third career for him. And then I guess he got sick, Bobby, about 10 years ago, and his health really started declining?
Yeah, there's something around there.
And but what a funny guy he was. He did our show, Bobby and Jerry remember, and probably one of our most controversial shows because he promptly got on the air and started giving away folks' phone numbers that they probably didn't want people calling them. But he could tell some funny stories. What a great guy he was.
Well, guys, I'm going to have to leave y'all.
All right, Jerry.
We'll talk to you in two weeks.
Have a good
night,
guys, Jerry. Good week.
Good night, Jerry.
Good night, guys.
Well, I tell you,
good night.
Good night, take Jerry. Care. Well, it was, you know, Jerry has really opened up here in the last couple of months, and he's really filled in some gaps on some things, and it's really been an honor to hear some of the stories that he's been telling. Not that I don't enjoy hearing what you guys have got to say, but seriously, I could tell when we first started talking, if or I was on with you, if you'd asked Jerry something, you know, point blank, he would say something about it, but he didn't really want to give away a lot, but he's certainly turned around here, and I think it's been really great, not only for me, but I'm sure the people listening in have really enjoyed it too. Anybody got anything else that they want to discuss tonight?
I'll give you a couple of Maxie York stories with Rocket. I knew we were going to get into Jerry thing, so I didn't want to take up time earlier. I mentioned that Maxie died the day before yesterday. He was 90 years old, brother of Paul Morton. Rocket and him were coming back from Johnson City, going back to Nashville back in the 70s. And back then, when you went across 40 coming out of Johnson City to go back toward Nashville, there was absolutely nothing on the highway. It was an interstate, but there was nothing on it. And Rocket's stomach got tore up, and he needed to use the bathroom. So Maxie was driving, and he told him, he said, please, please pull over to, or, you know, the gas station or something. And he said, well, there's not any. So Rocket said, well, I got to go bad. Well, you know, all wrestlers, if they had been in the business more than 15 minutes, carried a roll of toilet paper in their bag. We went to a lot of high school gyms and different places where they just didn't have the stuff we needed, and so we carried it ourselves. So we got it out. Maxie told him, he said, get out, get right beside the front tire of my car and take care of your business. He said, nobody will be able to see you as they, go by or whatever, and, you know, you will keep you protected.
So Rocky got down, and he squatted down and got in a position where he could not move, and Maxie proceeded to back the car up, turn the bright lights on, and here's these truckers were coming by blowing the horn and making obscene gestures, and, you know. So, you know, it's just something only wrestlers would find, you know, great humor in. But Rocket, you know, there was nothing he could do. You just, you know, you've been got. So probably 2 months later, they were in Birmingham, Alabama, working at Batwell Auditorium. And Batwell used to have a shower over there that it was one of those metal, a little bigger than a phone booth that you could order from Sears and Roebuck. And you run water to it, you know. So Rocket had made this little invention where he took an extension cord and he cut the female end off of it, and he shaved the wires back a couple of inches, and he waited till Maxie went to the shower. And when he went to the shower, he let him get soaked up real good, and he plugged that extension cord into the wall. And then he took these two wires and touched them to the brass fittings on this shower. And needless to say, it brought a great sensation to Mr. York, who jumped out of the shower naked, soaked up to the eyeballs, running across the stage at Batwell, hollering, "He's trying to kill me." So, you know, there was payback to be made. So, but those just a couple of things that Rocket had told me had happened in his dealings with Mr. York. And then talking to Bo earlier today, he said that just when him and Paul would get together, Paul Morton, his brother, again, who was the referee, most people knew as Bald Eagle or Baldy from Memphis. He said that it was just absolutely hilarious to hear those two talk, because they would try to outdo each other telling stories. But just another character gone from our business.
Yeah, Maxie was that's another former Gulf Coast champion. He and Don Carson teamed quite a bit in the Mobile territory. They were called the Golden Tornadoes. And if you can imagine that duo, Don Carson was about 6'4", Mac York was about 5'6". Both of them with the long blonde hair, but they were quite a team. But Maxie was what, 90, Bobby?
Yes, he was 90 years old.
And Paul Morton, he's been gone a good 5 or 6 years now, and he was pushing 90 when he died. So
yeah.
Wow. So that's one more off of the list that Charlie has lapsed now.
Yeah,
90-year-old gone down. Charlie's going to end up the oldest man in the business.
Well, he's doing his best to hang on to that, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I hope I hope he succeeds.
Me too. And if you talk to Charlie, if you don't talk to Charlie a lot, you don't know, you know, too much about him. You talk to him, you never guess he was the age that he is. Not that you can judge people particularly by their age, but you know, he lives every day to the fullest, and. I really enjoy talking to him, and I know you guys rib him a lot, but I know you do too. I tell you what, we're gonna sign off here in a few minutes, but I want to remind you guys that I won't be available next week, so I'll be out in South Carolina, and so I won't be back in time for the show. So we will not do a show next week, and that'll give Mike a chance to. You know, get reaccustomed to being out of the hospital again. And when we come back in 2 weeks, Mike, I'm going to turn the hosting chores back over to you, because dealing really with the phone calls and stuff like that's enough for me. But I've enjoyed being getting the opportunity to do this for a couple of weeks, and I know that folks will be glad to hear Mike come back as the host, and I will too. So we'll unless anybody else has got anything they want to say goodbye with, we'll end it for tonight.
I just want to remind everybody that talking about Billy Wicks, Billy did our show, as I mentioned, so, and it's still in our archives, and so anybody that is interested can go back through the Blog Talk Radio Peace Day Pandemonium archives and find the show that we did with Billy, and it's very enjoyable. And I can't remember, Bobby, was Steinborn on with us that night, or was it Bill Bowman? One or the other was on.
I want to say it was Steinborn, but I don't remember.
I'm thinking
for sure.
I'm thinking it was Dickey too. Yeah. So you can imagine those two telling stories. So that
Well, if you look back in the archives, then look for those two names together. All right, gentlemen. I enjoyed it, and we'll see you and talk to you in 2 weeks.
All right. Good night, guys.
Good night.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.